Eric Metaxas here. Please join me in a life-saving mission to set Sudanese slaves free through Christian Solidarity International. Since 1995, CSI has freed more than 100,000 women and children from years of bondage and abuse. Your $250 gift frees, feeds, and heals these captives and sets them on a path to a new life in freedom. Please help us free another slave now. Call 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522, or click the CSI banner at MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com.
Hi, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. I just found out I'm supposed to be someplace else right now. So my sincere apologies, but I simply won't be able to introduce today's host, Mr. Eric Metaxas.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show. This is what we call Hour 2. We will continue our conversation with Michael Lind from Hour 1. But before that, look who popped in to the virtual studio. His name is John Zmierak. John, welcome.
Hey, Eric, good to be on.
We just have a few minutes with you before we go back to my conversation with Michael Lind, but I thought, let me see if I can get you to talk about your new article at thestream.org. It's kind of a fun article because you have an opportunity to bounce around to all kinds of different things. I guess you write so many articles a week that this was all your rejects or something like that.
Yeah, all the stuff that couldn't quite make a 1,000-word piece, but was too good to waste on Twitter. So I thought, let me make a little mosaic out of it. It's at stream.org, and the title is Short Takes for Deranged Times. And
I was, Takes for Deranged Times.
I was saying, I'm really kind of burned out by this crisis and the insanity, and I can't do what I would normally do for a peaceful vacation, which is come to New York City and run around the East Village eating Ukrainian food and hang out with you and go to Astoria and watching Practical Jokers with my best friend since age 7 and talk about all the crazy, dangerous stunts we pulled and our run-ins with the police and threats of death and dismemberment. We couldn't do any of that. I could take a walk in the woods or go to the beach, but that just stresses me out because I'm a New Yorker like you, Eric. So I can't even go to church. It's locked up. So this is what my mind looks like on stress. I talk in short snippets.
So you, yes. So
I can report on a win. I can report on that rear thing, Eric, a win. Andrew Cuomo, after pressure by the New York Post and you and me and Fox News, has reversed his policy of dumping virus patients at nursing homes.
Right.
That's big.
But let me ask you something. In any other time, he would be forced to resign in disgrace. This would be his lasting legacy that hundreds of people died.
Right.
Specifically because of his action. I mean, right. When can you ever point specifically to an action or an order? It's usually vaguer. But in this case,
negligent homicide. We should prosecute for negligent homicide. Not just him, Gavin Newsom in California, whatever the person is who's governor of New Jersey, is his name known?
It's the public Murphy, I think.
Yeah, okay, all right. The Irish names all blur together for me. Cuomo was forced to back down. So I think we see some progress there. What do we learn from this fiasco? When they emptied the hospitals of old patients with COVID and dumped them at nursing homes to make room for the tsunami of young, healthy people who never showed up.
Right.
What do we learn from that? For the next pandemic, we should have, the way we used to have fallout shelters, we should have something, a reserve of pandemic shelters, like hotels, which the moment we hear of a pandemic, they close down, federal government or the state government takes them over, make sure they're virus-free, whatever tests exist, whatever personal protective equipment, whatever you can get first goes to them, and we offer them as free quarantine facilities for old people and otherwise vulnerable people who wish to go there. And we guard those people like the crown jewels, which they are. We protect them because they're the most vulnerable. We do that first before we lock down the beaches to protect the starfish, before we tank the economy. First, we protect the people who actually might die. And to enforce this policy, the first thing that should happen is in each state, that governor's parents or grandparents, whoever alive, should be put in a state nursing home, state-managed nursing home, for the duration of the pandemic. So they have some skin in the game. Unlike the Cuomos, who, Matilda, we're with her, Matilda, So you go from one multi-million-dollar home to another multi-million-dollar home. It's so sad. It's so sad.
You remind me that I had to get it in that you know, Chris Cuomo, they were calling him Fredo, right? And I thought, he's not Fredo. He's Sonny. He's the hot-headed guy, right? And Andrew is either Zeppo or Gummo. I can't.
Yeah, there you go.
I can't figure it out. Okay, listen, though.
Cuomo brothers.
You write about this in the article. People can read about this. But let me just ask you, John, because I know people are thinking of it. When I read the article that you wrote at stream.org, and I got to the part where you talk about, you know, what you just proposed, apart from the jokey thing of, you know, sending Matilda to a state-run home. When you talk about that, I thought it's so sensible. Have you ever thought, I'm not joking, have you ever thought of running for office? I'm not joking.
Yeah, no, I'm somebody who ought to be behind the scenes writing the speeches for the guy who's taller than 5'6" and you know, the gym body and the metallic hair and, you know, that guy, the guy who I don't want to have to purge everything I've ever said on social media because it's going to haunt me. All for right. instance, if I'm running for office, I couldn't have done that little Italian shtick right there. That right there, that would have been... Yeah.
Well, I don't know. In the days of Trump, maybe you could do it. That's the thing, that things have just exploded. All right. So what
in the Overton window and crawled out of it.
What else is in the article at stream.org?
Well, there's an exciting new opportunity to abandon the Christian faith being offered by the Vatican. Pope Francis has started a syncretistic pan-religious organization along with liberal Jews and Muslims. It's called the Higher Committee of Human Fraternity.
Now wait a second.
Don't confuse this.
This is not a joke.
The Higher Committee of Human Fraternity, not to be confused with the National Institute for Coordinated Experiments, which is the villain in That Hideous Strength. We're not in an apocalyptic novel. We're in reality.
I have to just make sure you're not kidding. In other words, this is real from the Vatican.
Sounds like some Freemason front group. And I think, in fact, it is. But they are organizing a worldwide day of generic prayer to generic gods, God or gods, to ask those God, S in parentheses, to lift the pandemic. Here's what the Vatican said. Let me quote you. Let me give you the quote. Do you think I'm not making this up? Each one from wherever they are, and according to the teachings of their religion, faith, or sect, should implore God to lift this pandemic off us and the entire world to rescue us all from this adversity.
Here's the thing. If the United States of America did that, I would say, you know what? I don't like it, but I can kind of get how they're in a tough spot and they always have to include a Buddhist in the day of prayer or whatever it is. Are telling me Catholic Church at the Vatican, they did this. That is just...
It's happening tomorrow. We're being asked to fast and to pray. So I am going to eat a lot of pork barbecue and skip my prayers that one day because I want no part of this thing that seems like an outtake from a bad apocalyptic novel somebody typed up single-spaced on an electric typewriter in 1992, self-published, and sold exclusively at gun shows. Except I think those books were subtler than this.
I cannot believe. I mean, when I read it, I thought to myself, this can't be. You're just making fun of it. And then I realized this is true. The Vatican has jumped the shark. The Vatican is doing the kind of stuff that you would make up. They're doing.
The Vatican has jumped the shark and been taken up into the sky in a Sharknado that is wandering the world seeking the ruin of souls.
I was hoping you'd use the word Sharknado. Albin, we got to send this guy $50. Unbelievable. Well, John, we're out of time again, but thank you. We're going to go back to our conversation with Michael Lind, folks. John, thank you. We'll talk to you next week for sure. Folks, before we go, let me remind you, it is incumbent on you as a listener to the show or a viewer if you watch us on YouTube, it's incumbent on you to go to MetaxasTalk.com to click on the banner for Angel Tree. Try to send them to summer camp for a week. If we can't do that because of the pandemic, we send them and their families wonderful care packages with a Bible, with some sports equipment, with grocery cards. Folks, go to metaxastalk.com. Please participate. These kids need our help. God bless you.
Somewhere waiting for me, my lover stands on golden sands and watches the ships that go sailing.
Hey there, folks. I'm continuing my conversation with Michael Lind. He is the author of a brand new book, an important book, The New Class War, Saving Democracy from the Managerial Elite. Michael, you don't seem to be too hopeful about the possibility that the Trump revolution, if we can call it that, will succeed. I think because what we've been talking about has to do with this politically correct culture and the use of it's really like a cultural Marxism to beat people with labels and call them names if you don't have an argument. It seems to me the difference between what's happened with Trump and with previous similar revolutions is that I think things have progressed far enough in these dark directions that people are angrier than they have been in the past. In other words, I think that the reason Trump is so popular in certain circles is because people they never thought it would go this far, and he represents the antithesis of those things.
Well, I think that's right with the Republican voters. I do think there's a deep tension in the GOP between the voters and the donors. And the economic elites.
Yeah.
And particularly if you look at two of the areas where Trump broke with the prior Republican consensus, trade and immigration, working class has always wanted tight labor markets. You know, whether they're – without being racist, sometimes they are nativists. But it makes sense that your tighter labor market gives you more bargaining power with wages. Employers prefer to flood the labor market, you know, with the immigrants if they can, to have more people competing for jobs. In terms of the offshoring of industry, the Republican voters are opposed to this. Multinational corporations, lobbies for big business, you know, big investors, this is something they will fight. So I think that to the extent that Trump represents a new strain within the Republican Party, you're fighting the cultural left, but there's also an economic right, which was very wedded to this kind of idea that the nation state is obsolete, will have open borders, libertarianism.
I mean, but don't we just have to make the case that, you know, you can think that, but there's deep foolishness and we have to point it out, right? I mean, just, you know, going to immigration, for example, the idea that we can wipe out our borders and so on and so forth. This is a new idea. People haven't been really ridiculous enough to say that we should have open borders until recently. Trump has kind of driven people to these extreme stances. But I think anybody with common sense understands something is wrong here. And so I get the idea that, you know, huge corporations say, hey, we want cheap labor. We get that. But it seems like the voters are finally onto it, I guess, is my point, that we're talking about it.
Well, but Congress is about to expand H-2B guest worker categories, as I understand it. These are farm workers who are foreign nationals who are brought in as indentured servants, essentially, of the growers. So it's not simply wages. It's bargaining power. That is, a lot of these employers do not want someone who can quit. Right.
Wow.
The most fundamental labor right is the right to quit your job without having to leave the country. But all guest worker programs, unless you become an illegal immigrant after having your visa, if you're an H-1B in Silicon Valley, if you're a strawberry picker in Texas, an H-2B, you have to go back to your home country if you dare to quit.
OK, well, it's interesting. But I was going to say that it does seem to me that this is a kind of a compromise, isn't it? In other words, it seems to me that people would say it's one thing to import guest workers. It's another thing to let them vote, right? And so to that extent, it's a compromise because it doesn't strike me that there's I appreciate what you're saying, but it seems to me that that's probably the issue, isn't it?
Well, I agree with that, but I'm a Southerner. For several centuries, we ran the experiment in the South of having people who worked but could not vote and people who voted but did not work. It is not a formula for a happy society. If you are working in the United States, you can have a legal permanent resident, which means you have economic rights. You can't vote. But those economic rights should include the right to quit one employer and go to another.
Right.
Otherwise, employers will not compete for workers.
Yeah. Oh, that is just fascinating. I want to talk about this idea of globalization. As a proud American and somebody who believes in American exceptionalism, I have made the case that what makes America particularly exceptional is that we don't really say that we're exceptional. In other words, we say we have a set of ideas that anyone can have for free. It's not something that's in our blood. And so because we believe those ideas are important, we're not willing to concede that anybody's ideas are equal. And so when you have globalism, it seems what is happening is people are unwilling to be explicit about what is America, what has made America great, why our freedom is great, why we want to share it with the world, but why we don't want to lose it. And globalist elites don't seem to think, and this was the case when we were in college or whatever, that you know, they think of patriotism as kind of a jingoism. They no longer have the ability to say, I'm proud to be an American, or I'm proud to be from Texas, or I'm proud to be part of my town. They feel like that's kind of bourgeois beneath them somehow. The only legitimate allegiance you could have is to some, I don't know, to the globe or something like that. So it's okay to talk about the planet. It's not okay to talk about America.
Yeah, I think that involves the overclass cultural view of intermediate institutions and communities in general that are between you and humanity. That is, the sort of the ideal is you have the unfettered individual at one point, and then you have the entire human race,
right,
to which you should be loyal at the other. And these intermediate groups, the family, the neighborhood, the religion, the nation state, these tend to be oppressive, and they're barriers between the self and the human race.
Okay, but we both, I guess, believe that that's a lie, and that, you know, when I mean, are we effectively talking about Burke's little platoons? I mean, is that what we're talking about?
Well, it goes deeper than that. It goes to your basic anthropology. Do you believe that babies are born with fully developed personalities and preferences, and they then get kind of brainwashed by society to be liberated later? Or do you believe that we're kind of a mass of conflicting impulses, and we have to mature by being shaped by society? So our social roles are not something alien that's imposed on us necessarily. It is sometimes, but they really constitute who we are as individuals, being from a particular place, a particular family, a particular country.
Well, that's let me just I don't want to lose this thread of, you know, you said it's more than the little platoons, but the point is that the only way self-government can work, the only way freedom can work, is if you have effectively these baffles, right? And that's what family is, that's what church is, that's what local communities or states are, is that you I mean, it's what the Electoral College is. You have these things that slow down the transfer of power, right? That they kind of I mean, there's a lot to say there, but it seems to me that you're saying that is at the heart of our system working. The founders clearly understood that, but the globalists don't.
Well, they're against federalism, not only in government, but in the economy and in the culture as well. And that was my point about the working class. The only way the working class is ever going to have in any kind of power is in local organizations that are the building blocks of state and national federations,
right.
That they can control indirectly through many steps. And when you tell people you get rid of the local chapter, the local organization, the federation, And if you look at our parties nowadays, they're simply labels that can be bought by billionaires and teams of consultants. And if you say that, well, you by exercising your vote every few years, you are having real power, that's simply not the case compared to, say, 50 or 60 years ago when you could influence your local ward. The ward could influence the county party. The county party influenced the state party, and the state party influenced the national party.
It seems inevitable that we bump into a conversation about the Electoral College at this point. I'm amazed that the Democrats have been now very open about calling for, you know, the end of the Electoral College. It seems to me just crazy, but it seems to tie into this thesis.
Well, what you find, weirdly enough, is that the working class is overrepresented in the Electoral College, and the managerial elite is underrepresented because they're clustered in a few cities and a few states, which tend to be Democratic. So the left denounces the Electoral College as a scheme by slave owners in the 19th century, which may very well have been, you know, to maximize their power. But at this point, the states that are overrepresented in the Electoral College have the largest ratio of working class people to rich people.
That's exactly the okay. We're gonna come back. Final segment, folks, with Michael Lind. The book is The New Class War.
Flies, darling, don't explain. I recall Central Park and
Christian bestselling author and speaker Richard E. Simmons does not shy away from the big questions of life. His latest book is called Reflections on the Existence of God, and it tackles the biggest question of all, does God exist? I've read this book, and I got to tell you, I'm a little biased, but you can imagine that I like it a lot because Simmons offers insights for those grappling with life's biggest questions. Where do we find meaning in life? Who determines what is evil? Can we be moral without God? Does God even exist? Former White House aide Wallace Henley says, I've taught apologetics for many years and I've read every scholar mentioned in this book. Of all the books on apologetics, Simmons is the best I have ever read. This book is easy to read because it's divided into a series of brief essays, perfect for a devotional or discussion with a friend. I highly recommend that you add a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God to your pandemic reading list. Simmons asks questions that speak directly to one of the most important things you possess, your worldview. Folks, you know how important this is to me. Your worldview is going to impact the way you live your life for better or for worse. If you want to challenge yourself to spiritual and intellectual growth, and I hope you do, then be willing to ask yourself life's toughest questions. Dive in today by picking up a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God right now. Go to existenceofgodbook.com. That's existenceofgodbook.com. Hey there, folks. I'm talking to Michael Lind, the author of a brand new book, The New Class War, Saving Democracy from the Managerial Elite. We were talking, Michael, about the Electoral College, and you were pointing out that working class people tend to be underrepresented if we're going to go only by the popular vote and wipe out the Electoral College. So it is really telling to me that there are voices in the Democratic Party today who they don't seem to care about that, or maybe they care about it in the opposite way.
Well, I was shocked after Trump's election. I thought that the Democratic Party would have an autopsy like the Republican Party did after Obama won. Said, well, we've lost these swing voters in the Midwest, many of whom had been Democrats, and they shifted their vote for Trump. We need to appeal more to these Midwestern working class people as well as other groups. And we have to persuade them that we like them and to come back home to the Democratic Party or to convert.
Yeah.
And instead, they were Nazis. They were deplorables. They were fascists. And the whole Democratic strategy now is base mobilization and base growth through immigration, which is the only part of their coalition.
That's growing. Is a really nice way of putting it. It's also creepy. Base mobilization and base growth. That's that doesn't seem to me a healthy way to proceed on any level. But you're right. And in other words, the reason people like Ann Coulter are screaming that Trump better build the wall is because that does seem to be the left's plan for the future, is to import people whose views they don't seem to have yet figured out about self-government, and they will go along with what we tell them to do.
Well, I think it's a mistaken strategy if that's their view. If you look at Mexican Americans, there have been studies by Richard Alba, Stephen Trejo, leading academics. They assimilate at more or less the same rates as the Irish Americans and Italian Americans, Germans and Poles in the past. So I think both parties are wrong. I think that you're going to see a much more mixed race, multi-racial working class. They're not going to be woke Brooklyn hipsters, but they're not necessarily going to be Breitbart conservatives either, and they will be up for grabs, and both parties will have to compete for them in the future.
Yeah, it's interesting. Again, I think, getting back to Trump, you said that if he does get a second term, which I'm sure he will, but you said that the weaknesses in his domestic policy will come to the fore. Say a little bit more about that.
Well, The big weakness is on the side of what the Russians used to call the cadres. That is, the president doesn't actually govern the country. The country is governed by tens of thousands of political appointees and civil servants. And some of them, if they think that you are the wave of the future, they are opportunists. They want jobs. They will do what you say, whatever they think personally. Others will be bitter enemies and try to undermine you. The problem that Trump populists have, to the extent that they're a movement, which the Reagan conservatives did not have, was when you're not in office, you have to be able to make a living in or around Washington, D.C. If you're deputy undersecretary of state, the other side comes in. Usually, and you go to a think tank, you go to a law firm, you go to a lobbying firm.
Right.
But if you're ostracized by those institutions for having been associated with the Trump administration.
Right.
And that is the case with some individuals. They cannot get employment after having served in the Trump administration because of Never Trumpers as well as Democrats. So that's what I look for. I look for the ability to have a career as an in and outer, as they say in Washington, rather than otherwise, you have these two teams. You have the Bush Republicans and the Clinton-Obama Democrats,
right,
and they're the appointees.
Well, all the more reason we should cut the government in half at least as quick as possible, because the idea that we have these, scores of thousands of bureaucrats is bizarre.
Well, Boris Johnson wants to send the House of Lords to the city of York as part of his decentralization.
Oh, my gosh.
Of power from London to these industrial regions. And I think there's something to that. That is, if you have modern telecommunications, then the problem with having everyone in Washington, D.C., where I lived for nearly 30 years, is they all know each other. They send their kids to Sidwell Friends.
Yeah.
They socialize.
Yeah.
They have the same worldview. It's like, put some of them in the Midwest. Put some of them in the Southwest. Put some of them on the West Coast or the Pacific Northwest.
Make them live in San Francisco's downtown among the feces and needles. I mean, it is interesting. I don't know how this is going to go.
Well, one of the reasons Washington, D.C. exists is because there was a fear on the part of some of the founders that if New York or Philadelphia became the capital,
right,
a single city would be the economic capital, the cultural capital,
right,
and the political capital.
Right. That's interesting. They saw that.
Yeah.
We're just about out of time. I am just so glad that you wrote this book. You said it's being published also in England?
Yes. The British edition comes out in February in London.
Unbelievable. Well, congratulations to you. Folks, the book is called The New Class War. It's an important book. The subtitle, Saving Democracy from the Managerial Elite. Michael Lind, again, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Hey there, folks. Welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show. Right now, I have David Quartman, who's with the Alliance Defending Freedom. We're big fans of the Alliance Defending Freedom. David Quartman, Senior Legal Counsel. What is going on in the world of religious liberty that ADF is fighting for right now?
Yeah, there's a lot of challenges these days because of the executive orders that everyone is familiar with around the country. And one of the problems has been, although everybody's taking care, as are we and as are you, a lot of us are working from home these days. My dining room table is now my office. We want to take care, but at the same time, we don't want to violate the Constitution. We don't want to throw out civil rights. And what's been happening across the country in different areas is that while sometimes restaurants and bars are allowed to open, churches are not. Even though similar uses are allowed to be gathered, if you go to religious service or even a drive-in service, that's prohibited across the country. So we filed several cases in Kansas and Mississippi to try to rectify that.
What is the one, I think I talked about it last week in Mississippi. Tell us about that one.
Right. There was in Mississippi, interestingly enough, a very small church. Churches are getting creative these days to meet together. So they decided to have a drive-in service. And so they had a low-frequency FM radio. People came to the church. They stayed in their cars. They separated with the spacing. They listened to the service through the FM frequency. And yet eight police cars came in, sirens blaring, and ticketed each person $500 merely for engaging in that.
Now this is ringing a bell. This is infuriating. And again, the reason I'm a fan of the Alliance Defending Freedom is you guys and just a handful of others out there are our last line of defense. Most Americans have had so much religious liberty over the decades and generations that we're completely ignorant of what a blessing it is. And so when the government muscles in really stupidly and ham-fistedly, we don't seem to understand that this is fundamentally illegal. It's unconstitutional for them to do this, and we actually have to fight back. I'm kind of amazed during this COVID shutdown, it's only heightened my awareness of the ignorance of most people in government when it comes to the issue of religious liberty.
Yeah, and what's amazing about it is it doesn't even make sense, putting the Constitution aside, it doesn't even make sense at a practical level or a safety level. So, you know, COVID doesn't care why people are meeting together. So why is it okay to go to the office, to pick up alcohol, for example, to go to a drive-in restaurant, but not okay to do the same when it comes to a drive-in church service? And that's really what the bottom line is. We want to protect everyone equally, not pick on people of faith because they think they're timid. Well, just put up with it.
Well, that's kind of my point. I guess when I talk about the ignorance that we have in the country right now, it's the ignorance of the centrality of faith in American life. We had that from the beginning. Tocqueville talked about it 50 years after the founding. It's so central to who we are as a people. But as the secular media has had more influence over the decades, we've become less and less. Some of us have become less and less aware of it. And you see these kinds of bizarre abuses as though church were not fundamental to who many people in America are. What are some other cases you guys at ADF are looking at right now?
Yeah, we've got a case that we just worked on in Kansas, which was a statewide order, something similar. You can go to restaurants and you can go to bars, but you can't have 20 people in a church service. And we just won that case. I'm challenging the statewide order there. We just sent a demand letter about to file a case in Massachusetts where this local startup church, it only has about 30 people, said, okay, we're going to meet the number 10. So the limit you hear all the time is 10 people or less. We're going to abide by that. We're going to have three services with less than 10 people. They still got a cease and desist order from the local health department banning that church service. So that's another case we're working on right now.
I just, what amazes me is why Americans put up with this kind of thing. I think that we have lost some of our revolutionary spirit in this country, and we need to go back to basics and understand what does it mean to be a free people. And we need to push back a lot harder when the state comes in. Because I think we're so nice, we sort of assume that they have the authority, and we need to understand, no, in cases like this, they can be wrong, and we need to be civilly disobedient, and we need to let them know that we're not going to allow ourselves to be pushed around in this way. We just got a few minutes left, David. So let's just see, are there any other cases that we should talk about today?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest things that's going to be happening now is now that some of the orders are winding down and they're bringing new phases in to allow people to start going back out and engaging in things, it's the same problem in the reverse order. And so we're already looking at states like Illinois and California, Washington, Oregon, and basically with their day and it's saying is you can go back to restaurants, you can go back to theaters, you can go back to bars, but you can't go back to church yet. And of course, that's too important because we don't want to get rid of the Constitution because that helps everyone. Whether you're religious or not, or whether you're going to church or not, is not the point. We don't want the government to have the authority to say we're getting rid of your constitutional rights for a period of time because that doesn't work for anyone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they don't have the right, but we don't want them to steal the rights and pretend that they have the rights. The Alliance Defending Freedom is, what is it? What is your website address in case people want to visit you? As you know, I'm a big fan.
Sure. It's adflegal.org.
ADFlegal.
Information not only about the COVID cases, but all the other work that we're doing from the Supreme Court and down.
ADFlegal.org, did you say?
That's right. ADFlegal.org.
ADFlegal.org. So, I guess I'm kind of amazed. What states are making the case right now that you can go into a restaurant, but church is off limits? And why would they make that case? They say it's non-essential, that, you know, eating food in a restaurant is essential.
Yeah, and it's a lot of the Western states, of course, and it's spread all around. Illinois is there, New York is there. And I think that's one of the problems. From the very beginning, everyone notices they have what they deem to be essential business and non-essential business. The problem is they've categorized, for the most part, churches in the non-essential category. Well, of course, a lot of people would disagree with that. We think church and meeting together is essential, especially when you're allowing other types of uses. For example, you know, go into a theater or go into a bar, but not go to the church under the same circumstances. So I think that's been one of the biggest problems is not realizing the importance of gathering together for faith purposes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. If you believe in the power of prayer, and we all should, my goodness, what could be more important? I'm sorry, we're out of time. David Kortman, Alliance Defending Freedom. Thank you, sir.
All right. Good to be with you.
Welcome back. Now, I've got a question for you folks. I'm going to get very, very personal. Albin, this
is
directed at you. It's not directed at you. This is to my listeners, to anyone listening or watching me now on YouTube. This is a very specific question, and there's only one right answer. Okay, and the question is, now, if you get the answer right, you will be entered in a drawing to win innumerable signed books. Half the books in the room behind me, if you're watching on video, will be signed and sent to you. You get to visit us in the studio at the Eric Metaxas Show when we go back to the studio, which will be shortly by the grace of God. So if you get this, if you get the answer right, you will be entered in the drawing. If you get the answer wrong, you will not be entered in the drawing, and there will be no chance for you to win all of the signed books and have a visit to the studio. And by the way, if you can't come to the studio in New York, you can send someone in your stead. You can send a group of people. You can contact a friend who lives near New York and say, hey, you're going to the Eric Metaxas Show to meet Albin and Eric and to have sandwiches. Okay, so here's the question. Are you ready? You ready? Here it is. Have you gone to MetaxasTalk.com and donated anything to the Prison Fellowship Angel Tree cause that we're doing right now? If you said, yes, I did, you got it right. You are entered in the drawing, and all of these things might be sent to you. Now, by the way, if you got it wrong, this is good news. Albin, you know what? There's good news.
I know.
I wanted there to be an escape hatch for the people who got it wrong. If you said no, which is the wrong answer, if you got it wrong, if you got it wrong, here's what you can do. You can go to MetaxasTalk.com like now, or in a moment, And when you go there, listen carefully, folks, when you go to metaxastalk.com and you click on the banner and give, that will be basically as though you had already given before I asked the question. We're going to let you have it till the end of the day today. If you give, if you go to metaxastalk.com and give, we will, you know, we'll accord it to you as righteousness or something biblical like that. We'll let it go. We're not here to shame you. We're only here to shame those of you who need shaming. Alvin, am I right?
Yeah, shame on you.
Only the people who haven't gone to metaxastalk.com. Honestly, folks, we joke, but it is such a wonderful, wonderful organization doing God's work. I really do want to say that when you give to the children of prisoners, that is just, it's an investment in the whole future of the country and the culture and the civilization, because these kids, they're marked, you know, they're having a tough life and the odds against them are tough. When you reach out to these kids with the love of God, and you let them know somebody cares about them, I'm just telling you, that's like a major, major investment. And, you know, God commands us to care for the prisoners. So before we go, Alvin, we're leaping into the weekend here. If anybody needs masks, by the way, I happen to know if you go to givingmasks.com/Eric, some of the best masks you can buy. People today are going crazy. What's the right one? givingmasks.com/Eric, givingmasks.com/Eric. And they have said, that's why they're called givingmasks.com, that whatever you buy from them, you know, you need masks, right? Whatever you buy, whatever number of masks you buy, they will donate the same amount of masks to people on the front lines in hospitals. We've chosen New York Presbyterian Hospital, but whatever. So go to givingmasks.com/Eric. And before midnight tonight, go to metaxastalk.com, click on the banner, and we'll give it to you. We'll give it to you. You'll get 100 on the test. Have a blessed weekend. God bless you.